You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
This week, we have something special for our cigar review. Today's cigar review is brought to you by The Cigar Shop, home of the cigar nerds.
Hells yeah.
If you are in the coming area and you need some fine smokes, go check out The Cigar Shop. It's at 4320 Setting Down Village Road, Suite 800 in Cumming, Georgia. Go in there, talk to Tim, tell him we sent you.
And you know what? I want to expand it out because not only is it an awesome place to go and have some smokes, but if you're a wine connoisseur or you're big into craft beer, I mean, he probably has one of the best beer and wine selections just about out of anywhere in Cumming. But I mean, any of the cigar shops that I've been to, nothing compares. Like, you know, Tim's definitely got the spot to go.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the biggest cigar shop I've been to. So. I've never found a better cigar lounge, and like I said, the reason why this episode's kind of brought to you by is because Tim hooked us up with some unreleased cigars. So we are like the first people to be smoking these cigars before anyone else can get them. That's how gangster we are. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
We are smoking the Monte Cristo White Series Vintage Connecticut, and I gotta say, man, the flavor profile in this cigar is awesome. I mean, I'm digging the smoothness, the creaminess. I mean, it's got a very rich aroma to it. I mean, this is an all-around just sit back, relax. I mean, the cigar's a little bit milder than what, you know, we've typically talked about on the show. So this is one that, I mean, I would recommend to folks that are into the more mild, medium flavored cigars. But, I mean, it's also got a complex quality to it. So...
Yeah, I mean, the Monte Cristo White Series, it's definitely a milder cigar. So, you know, if you're not like us and don't smoke the stuff that's black as the Ace of Spades, it's going to really overpower you. This is a good, I would say, cigar for someone that doesn't want to, like, burn their palate out like we do.
Yeah, I mean,
it's got the flavor. It just doesn't really have, the strength behind it that's going to, like, you know, knock you down. It's a good, flavorful, creamy cigar.
I mean, it's got the fact that the wrapper is a vintage 2008 Connecticut shade with a Nicaraguan binder, and it's got a Dominican, Nicaraguan, and Peruvian filler. And
that Shade Grove Connecticut wrapper, that's, you know, 100% American tobacco on the outside there. And if you're not familiar with what we mean by Connecticut shade grown, it's, you know, a type of tobacco that comes from Connecticut, but they also grow it under these like mesh tents nearly. So it's not grown in like direct sunlight. It's actually grown in the shade, hence the name Connecticut Shade Grown.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things that's really striking me about this cigar is just the aroma, dude. I mean, when we lit this cigar, I mean, it just, you know, completely, you know, engulfed the room. And I mean, hell, we even got compliments from Rachel that, damn, that cigar actually smells good. Doesn't smell like the stuff you guys typically smoke. So, you know, I really appreciate Tim giving us this hookup and everything. I mean, I feel pretty privileged that, you know, he thought of us and said, here, guys, you know, just...
I mean, this is a, you know, kind of a exciting time of year for cigar smokers because this upcoming week is when the big cigar trade show, the IPCPR, I believe it's in New Orleans this year. That's all going on this week. So there's going to be a lot of new stuff released, a lot of, you know, a lot of deals and stuff. And so just about every cigar shop that I know of are down there checking these things out. So, you know, hit your cigar shops in the next couple of weeks because there'll probably be some, there's always some kind of new releases or people bringing back cool stuff from the show to try out. So this is definitely a time to, you know, go out there and expand your horizons and see what's, you know, coming new to the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always excited, like you said, this time of year, just because you don't know what you're about to get your hands on. And, you know, you see a lot of the same stuff, you know, typically on, you know, most cigar stores' shelves. And this time around, things switch up, so you get a little bit new variety, and I'm always one that likes to experiment and try new things, so...
All right, and with that, we'll be right back. This is going to be our, since we can't actually go on vacation because we're broke cigar nerds, we spend all our money on cigars, we decided to talk about movies, about beaches and places you'd go on vacation. So this is our summer movie episode.
Word. Stay tuned, folks.
Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
And welcome back. It's summertime.
Yeah, dude, good thing I got my pool full of ice and I can just kick back and chillax as the humidity approaches 100%. The weather today is about 95, 96 degrees, so I'd say this is a nice summer day to do something like go to the beach.
Or sit in the basement, smoke cigars, and talk about other people going to the beach, which is pretty much what we're doing this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, man, I'm not necessarily opposed to beaches and fun and all that stuff, but I don't have to deal with the sand, the sweat, the humidity, and yeah, here I'm comfortable. I got some stogies, I got my beer, I'm pretty content.
Well, that's one of the, we should have, like, you know, took our microphones down to the lake or something and...
there's mosquitoes.
Done a real summer podcast. But no,
you would have heard is, ow, damn it.
Why is it so hot out here? My microphone is melting.
Yeah.
That's one of the cool things about summer movies, and not just, you know, your summer blockbuster movies, but your movies about summer. Hell, if you don't want to go out to the beach and or if you can't go on a vacation, you know, freaking fire up a good summer movie. Watch somebody else hang out on the beach. You know, at least you can experience it vicariously.
Yeah, my problem is I watch those films and I'm like, yeah, that's why I don't go to the beach. I'm too out of shape for that shit. So it's like, I need to tone up, actually utilize one of these gym memberships, get some exercise, start doing some things. And that way I can play volleyball and I can run and I can do all that stuff.
Yeah, you want to be able to play volleyball where they play some kind of rock melody. What is it, Top Gun, Hanging with the Boys or whatever it was.
I mean, that or, you know, some Don Henley, Boys of Summer. I mean, you know, hell, we'll even give some, you know, Kid Rock, you know, Summertime or whatever the hell that song is.
Yeah, I've, how was it, Let's start off with not just talking about beach movies, but yeah, also summertime is the season of the summer blockbuster movie.
And it didn't always used to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, normally...
So we're going to take it way back, way, way back, like 1940 style.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, summer was the time people were on vacation, so there wasn't a whole lot of new movies, or at least not big movies that came out during that time. Everybody wanted to see movies kind of... in the fall or early in the year.
Yeah, because people are actually going outside and getting vitamin D and whatnot. And nowadays we're so in tune with our tablets and our electronics and stuff. We're like, ooh, sun, bad, evil. My pasty white skin is going to melt away or something.
Yeah, and that kind of all changed back in 1975. Do you know why, Brad?
I think it has something to do with something about a big shark and, you know, some people getting eaten. And, I mean, still to this day, I damn love the Jaws movies.
Yeah, I mean, Jaws is, you know, pretty much known as the first summer blockbuster.
And let me stop you right there. So the term summer blockbuster, that's something that kind of started with Jaws, and we all understand today, but... You know, the reference to 1940s is actually the term blockbuster came about was referring to aerial bombs capable of destroying whole blocks of streets. So I think it's kind of ironic that, you know, the term blockbuster actually used to physically mean, yeah, your block's going to get blown the fuck up.
And now it's just movies that blow up your wallet and...
And we watch producers and actors and everybody else gross their millions of dollars and everybody lives happily ever after.
Yeah, but like I said, Jaws was one of those things. I mean, it was a small movie. I think it was like, what, $6-9 million the first movie. But, you know, since it was based on like a 4th of July weekend, they wanted to release it during that summer month. So people that were heading to the beach would be like, oh, crap, I just saw this movie about a big shark eating people. I wonder how many summer vacations that movie ruined when it first came out.
I don't know, man. I mean, well, hell, we fast forward to today. I mean, how many shark attacks have you heard about within the last 2 weeks? I mean, there's
yeah.
I mean, there's been probably more than I've heard about in the previous 10 years, and I don't know if that's just media sensationalism or...
That's probably why I still don't really like going to the beaches, because I watched Jaws when I was a kid, and I was like, nope. There's like things that eat people in that water.
I mean,
water.
At least go into Lake Lanier.
There's nothing
you know,
that big in Lake Lanier. There's some big ass catfish. Well, but there's no 30 foot catfish.
You go to Lake Lanier. I mean, the biggest thing you got to worry about is having a scab on your leg and the damn bluegills coming up to you and picking the scab off,
or getting some kind of infection from the poop water.
Oops. Yeah, they did do a water test and determined that the mercury levels were high, so they were recommending folks to no longer eat the fish. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean. But yeah, like I said, that movie blew up so big that kind of, you know, Hollywood's like, oh crap, we could drop some serious movies in the summer months. And since then, like I said, it's been just a line
yeah,
of big
I mean,
summer
and,
movies.
And you know, up until this point, I just automatically drew the assumption that, oh, you know, kids are out of school and blah, 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 blah. And you know, that's the reason I thought that summer movies were always so popular. But you know, the fact that that's not necessarily true was, you know, kind of a revelation for me.
And the thing is with summer movies as well, it's they're different usually than what you see that come out in the holiday season now in the fall. Like, summer movies, I think, have to have, like, certain requirements. Like, there has to be an explosion.
Budgets. Like, explosions.
I mean, ever since Roy Scheider said, like, smile, you son of a bitch, and blew up Jaws, like, every summer movie is like, we've... Even if it doesn't make sense to the plot, there will be an explosion in a summer movie. It's required. And the hero can't look at it. He has to just walk away and look a badass when stuff it blows up behind him.
I mean, I'm okay with that, dude. I mean, how many actors and stuff like that fit that profile that we try to model our lives after and just be like, you know what, that's probably the most badass thing I've ever seen. I think I want to steal that.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, summer movies, yeah, they're kind of... I don't want to say dumbed down, but they're not ones that usually invoke a lot of thought. You're not watching Schindler's List is not going to be a summer movie. It's stuff that's like mostly, you know, mindless action movies that.
Well, I mean, action movies are just
attention movies.
I would say action movies, maybe coming of age movies, and then just all around, you know, kind of feel good style movies. And I mean, there's a. Occasionally the, you know, horror movie I Know What You Did Last Summer, you know, kind of thrown in that mix or, you know.
Well, I read an article about the 11 essential things that must be in a summer movie and the top three things.
Hold on. This directly from the mouth of director Smokin' Joe here.
Yeah. Action, adventure, and thriller are like the top three summer movies of all time. Like the biggest summer movies, like 50% of them is freaking action movies.
Like Jurassic World, Mission Impossible.
Anything with an Avengers in the title.
Avengers. Avatar. I guess that would be considered action. Or would you consider that action or more sci-fi? I don't know.
Yeah, probably kind of sci-fi. But yeah, it definitely had some action in it. So it's pretty much an action sci-fi. But yeah, action movies are the number one thing. And also explosions.
Yeah. That are just things doing with summer camps in general. I mean, you do have the Friday the 13th out there and stuff. So,
and increasingly, you know, at least, you know, since I'd say the late 80s, freaking summer has been the time of the comic book movie. Like pretty much all our comic book movies have come out, you know, between, you know, May and July.
And I think that's where I draw the premise that, you know, comic book movies, I mean, typically are geared toward, you know. Either your geeks, your hip adults, or you know, they're the types of movies that you can enjoy with your, you know, family. I mean, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is one that I referenced just because that was such a fun movie. I'm hearing, you know, people talk about Ant-Man now that's like, no, this is by far the funnest movie that I've sat through and stuff like that. I haven't got to see it yet, so.
Yeah, I'm probably seeing it tomorrow. What's some other things you think is a requirement of a summer blockbuster?
Hard-bodied babes and guys. I mean,
true, it's
there. I mean, yeah. It's summertime. You got to let the bikinis and, you know, the tan skin and everything else shine through. I mean, it's kind of a given. I mean, you know, that's one of the requirements. And I don't know. Me personally, like, I kind of think back to, you know, kind of Almost Famous. And I guess that's the wannabe musician side of me. And, you know, seeing the kid run around with Stillwater and, you know, getting involved with the groupies and, you know, all the debauchery that comes with that. Yeah, I mean, it's such an awesome movie. I mean, you know, I was like, I saw that movie and I'm like, damn, that could be my life, you know. But
yeah, I couldn't play shit. I would have been the nerd kid, like, you know, writing about the
rock star. Dude, you would be a roadie. You'd be carrying, like, 7 amps on your back. Like, I got this.
I'd be the dude partying with the band. I would be, like, you know, their sidekick. But, yeah, I can't play for shit. But, yeah. I mean, that one, I would definitely, you know, talking more about not the summer blockbusters, but movies about summer, that one definitely fits. Cause, you know, it's, if you haven't seen it, it's about a kid who is way too young, lied about his age to get a job writing for Rolling Stone and end up spending his summer vacation on tour with a rock band when he was, what, 13, 14 in the movie.
Keeping in mind, I'm probably going to offend some folks with this comment, so whatever. I've had enough beer. I don't give a fuck.
How is that different from any other episode?
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I'm basically boycotting Rolling Stone because Rolling Stone is no longer about music. It has become a tabloid.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read it in years.
You know, the fact that Rolling Stone now has a cover of Bruce Jenner or Caitlyn Jenner now, more so than, you know.
Well, they had the freaking whatever Boston Bombers on the cover.
I'm sorry, dude, but we had the passing of B.B. King, and B.B. King is a god in my eyes, you know, as far as music's concerned. And you take Jenner over B.B. King on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine? Hell no, I'm done with your ass.
Yeah, that's getting way, like, too political. But chase scenes. If you're going to have a summer movie, there's got to be some kind of chase scene. I mean, even Avengers, I mean, there's like a whole, like, van chase with Ultron. Even if it doesn't make sense, it don't even have to be a car. There'll be like a foot chase and usually part of the opening segment at some point.
Well, no, I mean, you know, talking, you took it to Avengers, but I'm going to take it back a little bit. Excuse me. Wet Hot American Summer. I mean, that's in there. Basically, the dude's like, you know, this girl that, you know, apparently you find out he's a virgin or whatever. Anyway, this girl's like all up on him, and he's taking the kids river rafting, and he's like conflicted, like, crap, do I go get some booty or do I take these kids river rafting? So he's like, screw it, I'm gonna haul butt, I'm gonna drop these kids off, and then I'm gonna make it back to camp tonight. And, you know, he ends up wrecking the van, so you just see him like running like that 12 miles, like, after crashing a van. And, you know,
every high school kid like understands that pursuit.
Yes, and I mean, and I think that's another thing that a summer movie has to be is, you know, regardless of, you know, the age of the characters or whatever, it's something we can relate to. I'm sure that, you know, my dad, you know, would see that scene and been like, yeah, I can relate to that when I was younger. I mean,
I've not seen Wet Hot American Summer. I've got, that's got to be on my watch list. I hear it's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually pleasantly surprised how much I love the movie because I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, I'm just like, oh, shit, we're going to talk about summer movies. So, yeah, all right, Wet Hot American Summer. Doesn't sound any more summer than that. So I gave it a shot, dude. And that movie was just hilarious.
And so, yeah, especially, like, I don't know, what year did that come out?
2001, I believe. Yeah, but it's like, fairly, the 1980s.
Yeah, because, like, it's what I've seen of it. I'm like, yeah, it looks like it would have been one of those 70s or 80s camp comedies.
But it's very much has that feel to it. Like, when I watched it, like, I didn't even realize, I didn't look at the date it came out or anything like that. I just watched it, and I'm like, damn, this movie's been out since, like, 81. Where the hell have I been? Like, and I was like, oh, wait, this is 2001, because I'm looking at some of the characters and stuff like that. I'm like, wait a second. That person to be, like, 20 years older than I am, or, you know, 10 years older than what I am, or whatever. Hell, I don't even know how old I am after this beer, but shit.
And that was a theme, too, like, in the whatever 70s and 80s was the summer camp based comedy, you know, the usually in a like an adult teen comedy where pretty much it's all about them trying to find either trying to grow up or trying to get laid.
I mean you have the, it's kind of ironic because you know, I'm not going to try to give away too much of the movie since you haven't saw it, but you know, it's funny, there's, you know, one of the you know, camp head camp people, I mean, she's probably in her 50s anyway, she's going through a divorce, and you have her, you know, basically trying to teach us arts and crafts to probably, you know, 9-10 year old kids, and these 9 or 10 year old kids are like giving her life advice, like straight up like, no, what are you gonna do when you see Ron? Like, they got her on the fake telephone and stuff like that, and she's gonna be like, you broke my heart, I'm never going back to you, blah blah blah. So, you know, it's these like 9 year old kids, like, stand up for yourself and you know, don't get suckered into the drama and everything. So it was kind of a upside down twist that I was like, ah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, instead of like, you know, someone teaching the kids to be adults, the adults are, or kids are teaching the the adults.
It's funny how that happens.
How to be better adults. That's like, what is it? There's that other summer camp movie with John Cusack from like a long time ago.
I don't know, one that kind of Meatballs comes to mind. There's I don't know, I assume you're not talking about Camp Crystal Lake.
Well, I don't know if I'd consider that a well, I mean, it was technically a summer movie. They One Crazy Summer is the
one crazy I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, that one came back, was it's been a while. That one came out in hold on, as I'm scrolling through the Googles.
Man, I love 86. This show prep that we do here.
Hey, our brains are on summer vacation, even though we've not left town. So, yeah, I'm a little bit behind on my research for this episode.
I don't know. I'm feeling sleep deprived, as you'll learn in our science segment. That's probably bad. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. It's also an excuse to stick around to the science segment to learn what the hell I'm referencing.
Yeah. An aspiring teenage cartoonist and his friends come to the aid of a singer trying to save her family property from developers. That was another big summer movie cliche back in the day with the camp movies. It was always the camp's about to get foreclosed on or something, and we've got to do some kind of crazy plan or competition or whatever to save the camp. I mean, that was the plot of freaking Ernest Goes to Camp.
Dude, I freaking love the Ernest
So many
movies.
Other movies.
I mean, well, I got to say, dude, I'm going to take it back a little bit to 1970s and talk a little bit about Woodstock. I mean, once again, kind of going back to my musician wannabe roots. But, you know, that summer of Woodstock and all of those, you know, teenagers and bands just coming out there to put on the free concert and, you know, the message behind, you know, peace, love, and, you know, everything. That is something I think that spilled over into a lot of the coming of age and the, you know, kind of feel good summer esque movies. So just wanted to throw that out there. It's about the only time I could probably talk about Woodstock.
We'll finally do that music episode. You've been wanting to do one.
And the, you know, ironic thing is Jimi Hendrix, probably one of the biggest artists to, you know, come on stage, shows up like the last day of the concert after most folks have left. And
oh yeah. I mean,
my, where the times have gone.
Yeah, that I still have that Jimi Hendrix Woodstock album.
I've got a 4.5 hour DVD of the Woodstock Music Festival, and it is amazing.
Oh, another thing all summer movies must have is some kind of shootout or fist fight. That's one of the number one things of all summer blockbuster movies.
All right, what do you think the number one fist fight would be for you?
You mean like hypothetically or from a movie?
I mean, either from a movie or hypothetically, either one. Kind of an open-ended question.
I think the best movie fist fight I've ever seen, I don't even know if it was a summer movie or not, but was it Any Which Way But Loose with Clint Eastwood? Where it's like a 20-minute like rolling street like fist fight. They're like, he's like a street boxer. I mean, and him and another like street fighter get into like this boxing match, and it literally goes on forever. It's like, this is like roams all over town. It's probably like one of the longest fist fights in movie history.
Yep. That was it, because it had Clint Eastwood, Sandra Locke, Jeffrey Lewis,
and his sidekick was a monkey. I mean, yeah. How can you go wrong with having a monkey in a movie?
I don't know. I don't think you can. I don't know. That was one pet I always wanted, and I think one of my aunts or somebody actually had a monkey and said it was the most disgusting thing she ever owned. Like, she's like, yeah, it would defecate and literally, like, just threw shit everywhere. It was bad. I was like, yeah, I wouldn't clean that up.
And a quarter, according to the list of things that movie should have, is murder. Someone always dies in a summer movie.
And speaking of murder, I mean, I think probably...
I mean, we lost Coulson in the first Avengers movie. Somebody has to die in a summer
movie.
Damn it,
you and the Avengers. I'm going to kind of swing it around.
Jaws. A lot of people die in Jaws.
How many CEOs you know have died during summer? I know of one that's really stuck out. Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes.
Dude, that is the epitome of...
Speaking of great beach movies, freaking Weekend at Bernie's. I mean... this came out in 1989.
Dude, I grew up, you know, back when I was, I was probably 7 or 8. And my grandma had a copy of that on VHS. And every time I'd probably pretty much go down to her house, she'd pick me up after school on Fridays, and I'd go spend the night at her house. And I think pretty much every weekend from the time, you know, I was 7 or 8 up until, you know, probably 12 or 13 or so, when I discovered what girls were, I could be found, you know, watching either that film or Dragnet. probably two films I really didn't have much business watching at that age. But
if you haven't seen Weekend at Bernie's, it's about
You haven't seen it, like, I don't know what you've been doing in your life, but you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's about two insurance corporation employees played by Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman, who discover they find out that someone has been embezzling in the company and try to tell their boss, who it turns out to be their boss. So he invites them out to his, like, beach house because he's going to kill them. Well, a hitman takes care of him first. So the only way they can keep from being off themselves is to convince everybody that he's still alive. And they do some serious, like, freaking
cover-ups,
Jim Henson-esque puppetry in this movie to convince everybody he's alive until they can get the hell off the island.
And, I mean, it just goes to show you, you know, I mean, you're a big CEO. I mean, it's obvious that this dude's rolling in money. I mean, he's throwing these lavish parties, open bars, you know. Oh, yeah, here, take my boat out. Or, you know, here's, you know, the bar, whatever the case is. And... you know, it just kind of shows how shallow people are because they don't even realize, like, you know, one guy, like, throughout the film is just hounding him to buy his freaking Porsche or something like that. And, you know, Bernie's not even given, you know.
I mean, he's even, like, they take him to a party. He's making out with girls and stuff. And he's been just completely. And the actor who plays Bernie, Terry Kaiser, who's been in a lot of stuff. He's just one of those character actors you see him show him up and all kind of stuff. I mean, just to play dead for the entire movie, that's some good acting just to go with it, you know. And
I see, and that was the thing. Like, I'm like, are you using, like, a real actor here? Do they have some kind of, like, you know, rubberized puppet or something? Like, I mean,
yeah, I don't know if they just did a full body cast on him and used a puppet Bernie, but yeah, it's. I mean, to be able to do that without, like, just cracking up as you're being made a puppet of.
Was there more than one?
Yeah, there was a sequel. There was a Weekend at Bernie's too.
Is that the one where, like, the music would play and he would start?
Yes.
That's what I was envisioning in my head, is I could always remember any time music started playing, he would kind of get up and start dancing and stuff. And I was, like, watching the first film, waiting on it, and I was like, wait, it didn't happen. So that means there's got to be more.
Yeah, or... in the second one, they find out that Bernie, like, no one ever found all his money he stole. He stashed it somewhere. So these gangster guys that he owed money to get a voodoo priest to cast a spell on Bernie, show them how to get to the money. So anytime music plays, it reanimates him, and he kind of just starts kind of like dancing along like a zombie. To try to get to the, and hilarity ensues.
Do you know what year that movie came out?
The first one came out in 89. I don't know when the second one came out.
So we already had zombie films prior to that then.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that could be like one of the first zombie, you know.
It's definitely one of the weirdest zombie movies.
This guy's not after your brain. She's just after your tunes, man.
Yeah. It's just like, you got to play the music so Bernie will dance.
You know, we talked about, you know, during our, you know, favorite stoner movie episode, a summer film that...
93 is when the sequel came out.
The Cheech and Chong films. Like, you know, people didn't really talk about them. You know, I didn't see them make any of the summer lists, but those always took place in summer. Either that or it was just a very tropical area.
I think it was just hot. It was L.A. I don't know them specifically being summer movies, but there are other summer stoner movies like Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, Dazed and Confused. Dude, what a great movie, man. I mean, it's another one we were at. What the hell? We went, like, straight up stoner films.
I think we already did that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's another classic tale of your
coming of age.
I mean, it's and the quest to, you know, kind of not only become an adult, but, you know, be accepted by the older kids. It's, you know, all about,
or to run away and not get your ass tore up by a paddle. Yeah.
It's all about the incoming freshmen's and the juniors who are going to become seniors the next year. They spend that whole summer trying to kick all the freshmen's ass, and then once they've kicked their ass, they kind of invite them into the crew and teach them, you know, how to, like, all right, now you're an adult.
Now you've been jumped in, join our gang.
Let's show you a good time. You know, one of, you know, freaking first times I saw Ben Affleck in a movie, you know, back when Batfleck was just being an asshole.
Yes.
And the main thing I loved about the movie was the cars in that movie. Those cars, from, because it takes place in the 70s. And those, like, freaking classic muscle cars are, I mean, I'm sold on not only the music, but the muscle cars. I mean,
dude,
if I ran into Doctor Who, I'd be like, let's go back to the 70s, dude. 70s look cool.
Yeah.
As long as you run into disco, everything else about the 70s look cool.
let's get a little bit more rock and roll. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely with you on the cars. You know, cars today just don't have the symbolism and the muscle and the... You know.
Yeah, if I could go back to the 70s, I would bring me back a 1970 SS Chevelle 454 with the cowl induction hood. I mean, that's... I can't afford to build one now, but back in the 70s, I could have probably bought that thing for like $6,000. Now it's going to cost me like $40,000.
Thanks, inflation.
Yeah.
It's your government hard at work, my friend. Speaking of governments, another good, summer film, Independence Day.
Yes, I mean... In fact, it was originally, like, you know, touted as ID4 because it was, you know, the big 4th of July movie. And, I mean, that movie was just huge when I was a kid. I mean, I can't remember what year that came out.
96, my friend.
Yeah, that was like the year before I graduated high school. So I was, you know, 17 at the time. And that movie, I mean, just the trailers of it, too. It had all these big name actors in it, but they never showed them. They showed, like, the destruction and the alien attack and stuff, but it really didn't even show you. It sold itself on the sci-fi alone without even...
It looked straight up like a destruction film.
Yeah, I mean, they really didn't show you what was going on until, like, some of the later trailers right before it came out. It finally started showing, like, this is probably one of Will Smith's first big roles. It really didn't start showing the big actors that are in it up until almost the movie was released. It just kept showing all the destruction and the alien invasion stuff. But I love that movie. And they're supposed to be doing a sequel of it sometime coming up.
Yeah, I keep hearing rumors of the sequel. I don't have any of the information pulled up about it. But I don't know.
So quotable, too. I mean...
Oh, yeah, dude. There were a lot of great
Will
lines.
Smith had the greatest lines in that. When he crashed his plane, taking out the alien, and then he's like, cousin's like, I was supposed to have been at a barbecue. Instead, I'm dragging your stinky ass through the desert. Your freaking drag lights hanging out the back. what's his name? Was it Dennis Quaid?
Yeah.
As the crazy abductee that turns into the hero, because he's like, they're like, we need pilots.
Wait.
Randy
Quaid.
Yeah, Randy Quaid. And they're like, we're all out of pilots. He's like, I used to fly in Vietnam, but he's like batshit crazy. And well, up until this point, everybody thought he was crazy because he said he got abducted by aliens, but then aliens show up.
All right, so hold on. That might be a new premise, because in Wet Hot American Summer, there was a guy from Vietnam that was batshit crazy, like, to the extent that he's humping refrigerators and, like, talking to a, I think it was like a can of tomato soup about all kinds of things that... You and I can laugh about off air once you've seen the movie.
I'd say I've done a lot of weird things. I've never humped a fridge and talked to a can of tomato soup.
I mean, we have drawn a large phallic object on a fridge.
Yeah, but we didn't hump it.
No, absolutely not.
Just wait to Dragon Con. You don't know what will happen there. Oh.
Better Dragon Con than Frolicon.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, what's his name is the crazy scientist, the Brent Spiner from Star Trek.
Yes. Yeah, another good summer movie, National Lampoon's, Vacation from 1983.
Yeah, I mean,
with a Chevy Chase.
You know, speaking of vacation movies, might as well talk about the vacation movie, which spawned a whole series of films. But yeah, that original Vacation was, I mean, that was like, I remember seeing that as a little kid. It was like probably one of the first great road trip comedies.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's another thing that we could say about summer films is, you know, kind of the whole road trip thing. I mean, Meet the Millers, that was a, you know, kind of interesting, you know, film. I enjoyed that movie a lot more than I thought I would, but...
Yeah, the road trip movie has definitely become a staple of the summertime movie. I mean,
especially like teen and family combos, because,
yeah, that's when a road trip movie goes bad. Or if you want to see another summer road trip movie, go see, was it Road Trip 2 Beer Pong? which I'm actually in.
Did you get a speaking role? Or you
no,
just,
at one point the stars end up in a strip club and piss off the owner of the strip club, and I'm part of the biker gang that chases the actors out of the strip club. So if you watch that movie, I'm one of the sleeveless fat bikers that are chasing the heroes of the movie down the road.
Another film, and I can't believe we haven't brought it up since before now, Caddyshack. Like, you're talking about explosions and everything else. So I and once again, you know, here we are. We've got a film that. You know, women are the priority more so than the golf club. So,
yeah, especially if it's a summer comedy, there's got to be some kind of weird, you know, someone's trying to get laid movie. That's pretty much all. Like, yeah, you know, we talked about Meatballs and hell, even Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes,
that all kind of falls in together. But yeah, you know, speaking of, you know, summertime, summer movies, summer vacations. I what is your probably your weirdest favorite best summer vacation story? The adventure that you've experienced yourself.
Let's see. Oh man, that's a pretty tough one. I mean, there's definitely been some positive moments. I will say probably the most memorable though is in Nicaragua with my ass on a 3.5-hour horseback ride. Previously have never ridden horses, and we're basically on a coyote trail on the side of a volcano to try to get to, you know, this basic hidden spring with a big waterfall, and you know, this horse is sliding down the trail on its ass, and you look over and all you see is like a 100-foot sheer cliff, and you know, the horse is actually having to cross its legs to stay on this trail. It's so small and steep, like it was definitely like, I may not make it out of here.
I tell you, I had one big Florida vacation. And I think it's probably the reason why I still don't really go to the beach anymore. Like, you know, normally if we do vacation, we end up going to the mountains somewhere. But my family decided for some...
I mean, dude, we deal with the heat now. Like, I want to go somewhere cool, like you said.
I'll some
take
reason,
a river over a lake any day.
My family decided to take the Great American Road Trip Florida Vacation. We actually bought a camper, went all the way down to spend a couple days in Disney World, come back, hit Cape Canaveral, toured the Space Center, and, you know, kind of drove back that way. But this was the vacation from hell. It could have been a plot to a movie. So many bad things happened on that vacation. I got electrocuted on that vacation because the...
Well, dude, you're not supposed to pee on electric fences, all right?
Well, it was close to that because the camper that we had, the plug did not match the plug-in at the camping resort. So my grandfather decided just to modify the plug by breaking off the ground wire. Shouldn't do that. So I go to step out of the camper, and I step on a wet floor mat because it had been raining, and touch the side of the camper. And all of a sudden, I can't let go. And I'm like just sitting there, like just freaking frying. And my grandmother's beating me with a book, trying to get me to let go of the freaking camper. I think it was the first thing. Then later on, we get a flat tire in the middle of nowhere and have to, you know, freaking, you don't have a spare tire for a camper. So we had to go find somewhere that had tires to get a new tire for the camper. Then the awning fell off going down the highway. And then, what else? When we finally eventually make it back to town, the horn locks up on the truck. So we're in drive through at Dairy Queen. We've been on the road for like freaking 12 hours from Florida. We're all exhausted, want to go home. And all of a sudden the horn's like, literally we had to like pop the hood and like cut the freaking wires of the horn. It was like everything that could possibly
been
go wrong went wrong on that vacation. So that could be the reason why I really don't go to Florida anymore. Bad things happen when I go to Florida.
Well, I mean, we got to go to Florida. I mean, we got to visit Mike. We got to do our adult Disney trip, and we got
to
do.
We got to go down to Miami, visit George.
We got to go see George, get and then we got to check out that sweet ass cigar shop in Miami or wherever the hell it was. So we got quite a gig, and then we can go 5 hours south, and I can show you all about Duval Street and the debauchery that happens in Key West. And we will need about 3 weeks to recover after that trip, as it should be.
Maybe we should buy that ambulance we saw and build the cigarbulance.
Yes.
Turn that into our camping van.
True that. Another summer film. I'm going to kind of take it back again. I don't know what it is. Like, I guess I'm old soul or something. But In the Heat of the Night, dude.
Was that a summer movie?
Bill Gillespie. Yep. So you had Virgil Tibbs, you know, played by Cindy...
Sidney Poitier.
Yep. And basically arrives in Mississippi to solve a murder. And
I don't know if I ever saw the actual movie. I know I used to watch the show all the time. That was filmed in like Carrollton, Georgia or something. You know, it was a Georgia show.
I mean, what about Smokey and the Bandit? I mean, I know that was another Georgia film. Was that summerish, or I can't really remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm talking about movies where you definitely know it's summer, where there aren't, people are on freaking beaches and stuff.
Speaking of which, fine. Freaking beaches. Let's take it to the ocean with Point Break and get our surf on,
yes,
man. Because I tried to surf in Nicaragua and basically realized I had no business trying to surf because, dude, there was like 7-8 foot waves. Me being from the lake, you don't have waves that big. And, dude, I went under, and I must have rolled on the ocean floor just getting tumbled for what felt like a minute and a half, probably 15, 20 seconds. Yeah. But, yeah, it was quite an experience.
Yeah, I've never been anywhere where they had real waves. I mean, I used to go down to Mobile and, like, the Gulf Coast with my grandfather all the time. And, yeah, you get maybe, like, 3 foot waves at the most. You might be able to bodyboard, but there's no surfing in, like, Florida. Or at least not there.
I enjoyed the heck out of, just basically body surfing and stuff like that with the little boogie boards and things. I mean, that was pretty cool. I mean, you could get out, 50, 60 yards and ride the waves, and they would take you right up to the beach. And it was a good time.
But, speaking of surf movies, like you said, Point Break is probably the quintessential cop/surfering movie of all time. I rewatched that. It was on TV the other day, and I love that movie. I heard they made it, may be something they try to reboot. I hope not, because that's just one of those. It's like, it's such a classic.
Leave it alone.
Patrick Swayze as the dead president's a bank robbing crew that basically follows like the surf, travels the world to these different surfing areas and robs banks while they're in the during surf season, dressed as former presidents.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, like you said, it's one of those movies that really stands out in my mind. I mean, I can't think of any other surf films or anything that really stood out as much as that one.
And Keanu Reeves as Johnny Utah, former football player turned FBI agent, who figures out that the bank robbers have to be surfers because they find sex wax, board wax on some of the evidence. So he goes undercover and tries to join the surf crew to find out who these... it's basically Fast and the Furious, but with surfboards.
Yes.
It's proto-Fast and the Furious. He is the Paul Walker of his day. I mean, the whole line was like, dude, I'm an FBI agent. And Nick... Gary Busey as his partner, mentor. I love that movie. And even has one of the meth head gangs they run into who they think is the bank robbers before they figure out that it's Patrick Swayze and his crew, played by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's awesome.
I completely forgot about it. I rewatched that the other night. Yeah. Freaking Flea, Anthony Kiedis. They're the rival gang of surfers that that they run into.
I mean, I keep telling you, you know, you need to play bass. That's one guy you should take lessons from. Rumor has it he knows what he's doing.
Flea?
Yes, yeah.
I don't know if I could play him underwear, though.
I don't know, dude.
He likes to play naked a lot.
I don't know. I mean, you just get it on with your groove. I mean, dude, if anybody could pull it off, it would be you.
Just wait for Dragon Con.
I'm in a kilt. I have no underwear. Joke's on you.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that movie is so great. I mean, it does a good job of showing surf culture and it being a thriller crime movie. I mean, they do everything from jumping out of airplanes to car chases, gunfights, you know, surfing.
Was it you that told me you've never seen Triple X?
Yeah, I've seen Triple X.
Okay. Somebody I was talking to is like, I don't think I've ever seen that. And I was like, all the stuff you're describing there, I'm like, dude, you got to see Triple X if you haven't seen it. Cause but yeah. I don't know, man. I think I just love the feeling behind most summer movies is, you know, that essence, you know, either it's coming of age or a lot of the things we've already discussed. I don't know, man. It adds a youthful, like I look back on it, I'm like, all right, I want to be doing that stuff. And now I'm too out of shape to do that stuff. So, I mean, it takes me back to the days, you know, my teenage years of, you know, running wave runners, you know, jumping cabin cruiser wake and, you know, just playing volleyball on the beaches and stuff like that. And all around good times to be
had. What is that? There's a surfing documentary, too, that about the history of surfing. I'm drawing a blank on what it's called.
Let's see. Was it Riding Giants or was that something different?
I think that's newer. I think there's an older one than that. Something like,
because I was watching some you know, surfing videos on YouTube. Basically, you know, I guess one of the huge waves off of you know, either Australia or somewhere like that. Basically, called the Right and. Dude, it was just...
Yeah, that's pretty much where Patrick Swayze's character ends up in the movie, because they're like, we know he's going to show up for the, whatever, thousand-year storm or something like that, where yeah. it's supposed to be like the biggest... It's like freaking 30-foot waves, and yeah, pretty much he catches him, and he's like, dude, you just got to let me try to catch the wave. And he's like, he knows it's like suicide. He's not going to make it back, but he's like, all right, cool. Yeah, I respect you enough. I'm going to let you go to try to catch this wave. And yeah, the movie I was trying to think of is Endless Summer from 1966. It's a whole documentary about, it follows two surfers, Mike Henson and Robert August, who basically take a road trip or a surfing trip around the world and hit all of the big surfing countries. I mean, they go from like Australia to South Africa, Tahiti, which is a magical place, and Hawaii in a quest for like the best surfing spots. And I mean, it's just probably the quintessential summer movie. I mean, it just, you know, beach culture, surf culture, and not only seeing the, you know, American side of that, but you know, the world of surfing.
Yeah, literally. I mean, it's one of those sports that, you know, if I catch, you know, the X Games or, you know, something like that, and they're surfing and stuff, like, I always pause and I watch it because yeah. And it's something that I typically don't think about. You know, when I'm on my kicks, I mean, I come from a BMX background. I love BMX, motocross. I mean, basically anything to do with heights, fast speed, dangerousness. I mean, I'm an adrenaline junkie of sorts.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those. It's one of those things that, like skateboarding, that I am too old and too out of shape to do. But I respect the level of skill those guys and fearlessness they have to do those things. And it's just, like I said, it's one of those things that, like I said, I can admire it because I know I can never do it, but I love watching it when it's on TV.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, it's almost an art form in a way. I mean, it's just insane. I don't know. I did see a video, going to be a completely random tangent here, I don't remember if it was Travis Pastrana or somebody, but they did a double backflip and landed it in a monster truck.
Yeah, I think that was Pastrana. Like, dude's insane.
Like, I was just like,
that guy can drive anything with wheels. He's like a freaking Jedi of like motocross. I mean, if it has wheels,
motocross, I mean, drifting.
He's even raced like actual NASCAR now. Yeah. I mean, the dude can do anything. He's insane. I mean, he has so many like freaking like weird world records for jumps and stuff. But another surfing movie that I came across, that Blue Crush from 2002. That, like, when I first saw the previous one, I'm like, that's some movie about girl surfers. Like, what the hell do I want to watch this for? And then I finally sat down and watched it one day when I was bored and it was on TV. And I'm like,
females in board shorts.
Yeah. I mean, but I was like, this is actually a real good movie. I mean, it's all about a girl played by Kate Bosworth who dreams of being a professional surfer. And that's, you know, pretty much all she does is surf and, you know, works a crappy day job and spends the rest of her time, you know, surfing, and eventually gets the shot to, you know, become a sponsored professional surfer.
I don't know. You know, one thing I'm thinking about that's always big for me as far as the summer is theme parks. Like, I'm a sucker for, you know, water parks or roller coasters and stuff. And I'm surprised we don't see more movies, you know. One that I think Final Destination comes to mind, but I don't know if any of those were summer with, you know, basically thrill park disaster or something. Well, outside
back
of
to vacation. That was the whole point of that movie, is they were traveling cross country to go to Wally World.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you can consider Jurassic Park a theme park, I mean, yeah, of sorts. You don't have to necessarily worry about the roller coasters breaking down. You got to worry about the creatures devouring you.
But yeah, that, summer theme parks, I mean, that's, they go hand in hand. I mean, you can't have, that's like the, probably the number one thing people do this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm addicted to the Travel Channel when they do, like, you know, the world's most extreme roller coasters or the most extreme water parks. And I'm like, holy crap, I just want to go tour the country and, you know, visit all these places. Or better yet, even the world, because I've seen some, you know, water parks and stuff elsewhere that I'm just like, oh man, that would be freaking terrifying, but awesome.
Yeah, speaking of, you were talking about theme park horror. I can't remember if it's the Piranha movies. Like Piranha 3D, Piranha Double D. Well, like 3D all takes place at, like, you know, Lake Havasu, pretty much, like the big summer lake resort. But the second one takes place in a, like, whitewater-esque water park. And somehow, and the guy is getting his water from the lake, and the piranhas invade the water park. So now you got like freaking piranhas running around the wave pool eating people.
I'm going to need to get a better filtration system.
And another summer guy, freaking David Hasselhoff, freaking Baywatch. He is actually in the movie playing himself as washed up David Hasselhoff doing a celebrity appearance at the water park when the piranhas attack.
So this was before we had the Hoff 9000. So this is like Hoff version 1.
Yeah. I mean, that movie is just insane.
I mean, wasn't Piranha like Double D just supposed to be an attempt to just show as much cleavage and stuff as possible?
Dude, Piranha Double D is so bad. There is a scene where a girl is swimming and a tiny baby piranha swims up inside her. Then later in the movie, she's having sex with her boyfriend, and the piranha comes out and bites his wang off. That's how much of a jacked up... It's like, it's almost Sharknado-esque, but with more boobs.
Wow. All right. So, why have I not seen this movie then?
Like... Yeah, it is completely insane. But, I mean, speaking
it's of... It's all the things my nightmares are made out of.
But yeah, speaking of summer, yeah. You know, Baywatch and freaking, you know, Hasselhoff. I mean, that was a huge series all about freaking, it was basically a soap opera.
No, I mean, I can remember that, you know.
It made running in slow motion cool. I mean, how many times have we seen people like in modern movies make fun of Baywatch? And
I don't know. I can say
it's definitely
referencing, you know, our trip back to Nicaragua, Rachel's stepdad, guy's probably in his 50s, maybe the 60s, and he strips down to his bathing suit and he takes off across the beach, like straight up, like Baywatch style, every time he would see a girl in a bikini. Like, just like, you are burnt out, dude. Like, so, That may be like one of my top, you know, summer moments. I'm just like.
And even to throw back to Weekend at Bernie's, I've seen so many references in of that movie and stuff like today. Like, I mean, they talked about that a lot on How I Met Your Mother. That was like one of Barney's things. He's like, if I ever die, I want you to recreate Weekend at Bernie's, calling it Weekend at Barney's. That's my dying wish, is for y'all to do that.
Damn.
And that reference showed up on like several episodes where they pulled the full he ended up getting like on his wedding night, got drunk as shit and like passed out and like missed like his meeting his father-in-law and stuff and just like made a complete ass of himself. But his buddies the next day, they're like, what happened? He's like, oh dude, we just pulled the weekend at Barney's and puppeted you through the whole thing, so it's all cool. Let him believe that had actually happened.
That's impressive. All right, that's how I'm going out. I'm going to have my millions, and you know, even though I'm dead, I'm still going to be there to kick it and be the life of the party somehow.
Oh.
I'm an introvert, secretly an extrovert.
So as we're kind of wrapping up here the last, you know, 10 minutes or so, what's your any final thoughts on this this Monte Cristo cigar?
I mean, I am definitely digging this cigar. I mean, down here to the final third, I mean, dude, this thing is just creamy. It's relaxing. It is, you know, I could sit outside with it being a 90-degree day with 90% humidity, and even though it would be hot as balls, this cigar would, you know, compliment. It would be, you know, still a relaxing, enjoyable experience. Yeah, I mean, this is a nice, you know, change of pace. I mean, it offers such a complexity that, you know, my palate hasn't been bored. You know, I was afraid at first that I'm like, man, you know, thinking a mild to medium smoke compared to what I'm typically used to. And,
yeah,
you know, the flavor profiles and the aroma and everything else, I mean, I could see myself, depending on the price point of the cigar, going back to it time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really smoked many Monte Cristos because I've kind of been biased toward a mild cigar because, like I said, I kind of started off smoking the heavier stuff, and I'm like, a freaking mild cigar is going to be like smoking a cigarette to me. But I'm enjoying this cigar. It's definitely, like I said, a lighter smoke that you could have after, you know, a day of cutting the grass or something.
I mean, dude, I could see myself, you know, down at Dragon Con after, you know, putting in hours of work or just, you know, the hustle and bustle of the crowds, you know, finding me a nice quiet area, have my flask filled with, you know, a little bourbon or something that's a, you know, got a little bit more warmth to it. even the Woot Stout, you know, I mean.
We may have to pick up some of these steak Dragon Con.
Yes. I don't know, man. I can't say anything bad about this cigar.
It's definitely got a lot of flavor to it, even though it's a mild cigar. Like I said, I may have to start smoking a few more Connecticut cigars now that I've actually tried one, and it's I've kind of got past my bias of the lighter cigars.
I mean, and this is a cigar too that, you know, folks that aren't typically accustomed to cigars are, you know, have the, I guess, the perception that, oh man, a cigar is just not going to knock me on my ass or whatever. You know, this is something that I would give a first-time cigar smoker and say, look, if you want to indulge and, you know, figure out what cigars are about, take this, enjoy it, you know.
I mean, it being in Monte Cristo, since this isn't out yet, I'm not sure what the price point is going to be, but knowing Monte Cristo's, it's probably going to be a, I don't know, $10 to $15 cigar, because they tend to be a little bit of more of the high end. But if you're somebody who's just getting into cigars and wants to smoke something that's a little bit more high end but not ready for something that's like a freaking full flavor, full strength cigar, this would definitely be a next stage in your cigar development.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a cigar, you know, a lot of folks, you know, they'll talk about the opus and how coveted it is, but if you hand that to a first time cigar smoker, they're probably never going to pick up a cigar again. But this right here offers enough flavor and balance, and I mean, like I said, I would find myself going back to the cigar time and time again.
All right. Final thoughts. What's say your favorite summer movie? Not just a summer movie, but maybe even something off the summer blockbuster list. What's something that you would like recommend to the people that like you have to see this movie?
I think for me, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is a gateway film, I think.
That one can't fall. Yeah, I don't know if that falls in the summer. That was like an August movie. So it was like, it was at the tail end of the summer spectrum.
I mean, that was one of the biggest ones. Let's see here. I mean, Avatar was a great visual representation of a movie. I don't know if it was necessarily groundbreaking for me.
I saw that in theaters. I've not seen it since. It's not one of those that really...
I saw it in IMAX, and...
Yeah, it was visually cool, but I'm just... It was Dances with Wolves, but with aliens. It was Dances with Smurfs.
Let's see. I mean, I'm trying to think, because, I mean, I'm a little bit biased. I mean, I love my superhero movies. I love action movies in general, but I'm trying to find something that is a balance of all of that stuff rolled up into one film. And I don't necessarily know off the top of my head just one individual movie that stands out.
I would say if you have not seen the original, if you've not seen Jaws, that's definitely one that everyone should experience. I mean, it's listed as one of the preserved in the whatever the American Film Institute, you know, one of the ones that's like, you know, on the National Film Registry. That's one that I said just for old school factor, you have to see that. As far as more modern, Independence Day, that's probably one of my favorite summer movies. Like I said, I still go back and watch that, you know, even today.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe because I grew up so much of my childhood and just the memories that came along with staying at my grandma's house and stuff. I mean, I would put Weekend at Bernie's kind of in that category. You know, I think that's a film that, you know, especially some of the younger folks probably have not given the time of day.
Yeah, it's definitely a great summer comedy. I've not seen it in a while.
I mean, and especially, you know, it was different for me because, you know, like I said, probably the last time I watched that movie, I was probably 12 or 13. So, you know, 15 years later, here I am watching the movie again, and a lot of the references and a lot of the innuendos and stuff that I probably didn't think about when I was younger that, you know, I'm like, oh, I get the jokes and I understand now. And I don't know. I think that would be a classic that most folks would have to check out.
I would think freaking Point Break. If you've not seen Point Break at this point, you fail as a person, as a nerd. You have to see Point Break.
Perfect. Any additional thoughts or anything that we haven't touched on? Or
if you're like us and can't really go out to summer vacation, definitely do that. You know, go see a beach occasionally, you know, dodge the sharks, get out and do something with your summer other than sit in the basement and smoke cigars. But there's nothing wrong with sitting in the basement and smoking cigars.
No,
but
I mean, and we make it a point to, you know, I mean, we're definitely not just...
Get some sun, people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, and we find ourselves doing that. I mean, it may not be to a beach or whatever, but I mean, just about every other weekend, we find some kind of adventure for ourselves and, you know, make it a point to get out and, you know, experience something new, or, you know, maybe it's new to us and the rest of the world's like, hey, if you haven't done this, you're missing out in life. And they're like, oh, crap, you know, whether it's to find, you know, some awesome cuisine. And I think, you know, that's an aspect of summer that could, you know, I could go on forever. It's just talking about, you know, my barbecue adventures, smoking foods.
Yeah,
I mean, just being general outdoors.
I took a little like impromptu road trip, went up to Blue Ridge and hit the Blue Ridge Brewery and had a freaking awesome Kobe beef burger. It was freaking phenomenal. Definitely check them out if you're up there in the area. And also go by and see Tim at the cigar shop. Tell him we sent you. He'll probably be back from the freaking cigar trade show in the next week or so. So
he'll probably act like he doesn't know
cool
us.
And, you know, and new when he gets back for y'all to try. So yeah, go check him out. I know they got some big events coming up in August at the shop. So definitely a time to go up there and check out the place out and prepare for the upcoming
events.
Yeah,
and I mean, another facet of the cigar shop that we really didn't talk about is just the eclectic group of people that you meet. I mean, there's never a time when I go up there that I don't find somebody new that I find myself in a conversation with.
Yeah, I mean, we've met people from fellow nerds to, you know, lawyers, doctors, you know, whatever. It's definitely a bikers. I mean, it's a weird mix of people. You're going to find someone who's going to be your friend at that place. And with that, I think we'll wrap this up. We'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
What's wet? What's wet? What's wet? Now what's wet? And hot? And 3 months long, I'll make a girl show skin in the week, grow stronger, make mercury jump out the thermometer. It'll beat the heat by the end of the song. I got the AC blowing, feel the hot sun, y'all. Nick's deep and I make the tape fun for a bucket of ice cream cone. It's gonna run all over my Puma suede. This ain't one, y'all. Ooh. Ain't loving, I'm on the scene. I got three big wheels and a green machine. I got slip and slide and sit and spin. Now it's time for my mellow Chubb Rock.
Yeah. Chubb Rock rising, and I'll break your leg. And I'm more than a 40 ounce, I'm more like a keg. So just sip this, rip this before you miss this. You get hemmed up.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30.
Hell yeah.
What are we drinking today, Brad?
I mean, dude, I feel like we have the holy grail of beers.
Yes. This is literally a beer that I've been looking for at least a year.
Dude, we have driven all over the state to try to find this beer.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons we got into homebrewing. It was because we couldn't find it, and we're like, we'll brew our own version because they make a homebrew kit for this beer. And without further ado,
this is the Stone Fucking Wheat and Woot Stout.
Yeah, the 2015 edition Woot Stout.
Yeah, dude, I gotta say, man, I was excited, you know, I mean, just for the geeky nature of the beer and, you know, the nerdiness behind it. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a novelty, but you know what? I'm like, you know, it's a partnership with Stone. Stone's put out some pretty good products, and dude, I got to say, this beer is actually exceeding any expectation I had. I mean, the coffees, the mocha, the bourbon flavors that, you know, are warm on the palate and warm on the tummy as they go down, but it's so smooth and creamy, too, that, it's just so robust. I love it.
Yeah, if you don't understand the geekiness behind this beer, it's a collaboration between Stone Brewery, the CEO of Fark.com, which is a nerd news site, and Will Wheaton himself, who has become a big advocate of homebrewing and craft beer and all that stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, this is not.
And not only that, is the cover of the label of the beer is made by a, you know,
Dave famous the Reverend Johnson.
You know, famous cartoon or comic book artist, you know, designed the label for this beer. I mean, it's, if you are a nerd and you are also a craft beer drinker, this is something you must go on an unholy quest like we did to find this beer.
I think it's awesome that to give a little bit background to the artwork here on the bottle is Dave Johnson actually created the artwork for this bottle in exchange for, Stone and Will Wheaton and Drew Curtis and Greg's donation to the Hero Initiative, which is basically a charity organization that provides retirement funds for Golden Age comic book artists.
That's pretty
cool. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, this beer it's a Russian Imperial Stout, but it is probably like one of the strongest beers we've had. It's a 13% beer, and it's not like most things we get that is like a 13% ends up like a barley wine where the alcohol taste is just overpowering. But with this, it's you get a little bit of hint of it, but mainly you taste the bourbon, the vanilla,
I get a cocoa. Lot of mocha, a little bit of chocolate. I mean, there's a touch of vanilla, maybe some licorice in there. I mean, this is a very complex beer. This is one, in fact, that, you know, it says right on the bottle that, you know, it's perfect to, you know, serve fresh or to throw in a cellar. This is one that I would love to throw in a cellar somewhere, a dark, you know, cool place, and forget about it for a couple of years. Come back upon it and see, you know, all those flavors and everything just mesh with age and what this beer's potential really could be, because this was bottled on June 27th, so it's a fairly young beer.
Yeah, we're drinking this brand new. Yeah, but it's
excited. It's like, oh yeah, this is not going to sit in a cabinet. No.
not as long as I've been hunting for this beer, but yeah, definitely a lot of coffee and cocoa. But yeah, this version they've aged a little bit longer in the bourbon barrels, so you're definitely getting more of that vanilla and bourbon flavor from the oak. And like I said, that it's dangerous because, I mean, it's high in alcohol, but you don't really get that alcohol kit. It just tastes like a really good, you know,
It's everything that I would an Imperial Stout should be. Yes, I mean, and you know, I served the beer a little bit cold because it was in the refrigerator. So as it's starting to come up to its temperature now, I'm actually starting to get more hints of vanilla. And I mean, it's just everything that I would expect out of a stout as far as the complexity. And even though it is a high gravity beer, it doesn't feel, you know, high gravity on the palate. I mean, it's so smooth that this is.
Yeah, if you drank a couple of these in the night, you'd be on the floor.
And this is definitely dangerous.
Yeah, because like I said, this one will sneak up on you. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you look for something for so long, then you end up getting in, you're like, you know, disappointed. You know, the hype that you built up around it did not meet your expectation, but this fully met my expectation. This is an excellent beer.
I mean, dude, this has exceeded my expectation.
If you can find it, definitely, you know, add this to your beer list and go get this beer. So what are you giving on our Cigar Nerds Untapped rating?
I mean, we're going to log this one twice, so I mean, probably a 10 on a scale of 5.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 5, this is a freaking 10, dude. It's like, it unfortunately only comes out once a year, kind of usually comes out around this time of year. So if you can't find it this year, put that on your calendar to hunt it in the month of July. Instead of like doing it the rest of the year like we've been doing.
All right, dude, I need to shut up now because I need to get back to drinking my beer instead of listening to you talk about the beer. Like, enough talking, more drinking.
All right. We'll be right back with the next segment.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back to science! You ready to learn some shit, Brad? You ready to expand your cranial capacity?
I am, sir. My brain is ready to, you know, just absorb like a sponge.
Wow.
Here I am, just being a sponge. Time for you to educate.
Here we are. Oh, for some reason, I'm slipping into the Highlander theme. I don't know why. You ever have some nightmares, man? Like, some Freddy Krueger shit going on?
All right, so funny story about me and nightmares, right? There is only one movie I have found that has given me nightmares. And go ahead, because it's going to be
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Where are you?
The damn Scooby-Doo and the Reluctant Werewolf movie. That movie, to that day, I still watch it, and it's the only movie to give me nightmares.
Which reminds me, I heard the other day that they're doing Scooby-Doo Meets Kiss. They're doing a new animated special.
I saw something about that. I don't know how I feel about it.
I mean, they used to do that all the time back in the day, like Scooby-Doo meeting different celebrities. But Scooby-Doo,
I mean,
meets Kiss
Shaggy and Scooby like gonna get all kissed out makeup.
Probably,
and, you know, you're gonna see Scooby like with a Gene Simmons tongue.
Yeah, maybe Gene won't bite his head off. But anyway, a new study from the Science of Sleep Institute, nightmares are actually good for you.
It didn't make me feel like it was good for me. I mean, I kind of woke up in a cold sweat, like a little bit confused, and like, did that really just happen? Multiple times.
But yeah, they've figured out that nightmares are kind of a form of stress release. You know, your nightmares.
Why? Because it's like, oh shit, I've died, and then you're waking up like, oh, well, I'm still alive. Let me just breathe a little sigh of relief.
Well, there's two different parts of this. One of them is the fact that it allows you to work off like your stress that you have from your day, your nightmare, you get your heart racing, all that stuff, and it kind of burns off your stress. The other thing is that it takes the vague stress in your life and turns it into like a tangible object that your brain can convert into a memory. And it's easier for your brain to deal with something that's a memory because it's like, you know, it's happened and now it's in the past and I can deal with it better than it can deal with just like, you know, a vague sense of dread or stress or whatever's, you know, making you crazy.
That's kind of interesting. I wish my brain would find a different way to offload. Shit, that didn't make me feel good at all. But I guess you're right. You know, I guess it's, you know, kind of compare it to, I'd walk up to my dad and be like, Dad, I stubbed my toe or something like that as a kid. It hurts. And he'd hit my arm. And I'd be like, ow, my arm hurts. He's like, yep, forgot about your toe, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it basically converts all these stress and things into stories and allows you to deal with it. I mean, that's probably because I know I've been having some stress, and hell, I've been having nightmares about like work and shit, and that's why I kind of like, you know, if you see something freaky in your...
Yeah, we call that adulthood.
Yeah.
That's completely different than, you know, getting chased down by cartoon Dracula.
But, you know, you see weird stuff during your day, and then that becomes, you know, at least part of your nightmares or what have you. So, I mean, it's actually good for you.
All right. Well, now we learned that, and
not only does it help you with stress, it's also you know, we talked about Terminator last week. That's kind of how James Cameron came up with the idea for the Terminator. It was based on a nightmare he had about a metal man that was trying to kill him.
That's how I write all my metal lyrics.
And pretty much like the design of the skinless Terminator is exactly what he saw in his nightmare from what I read.
That's interesting. What else you got on the agenda? Something that's not going to scare the living bejeebus out of me.
Well, sleep deprivation to go along with your nightmares may cause memory loss.
So is that what we're attributing to us now having to do a recurring science segment so I can get re-educated because I don't sleep enough and therefore I don't remember shit?
Well, Uppsala University in Sweden just published in the Journal of Sleep a study by Dr. Jonathan Sadarnas. Anyway, what they did was they took a group of men and they taught them something like, remember the old memory card game where you'd lay a bunch of cards and you try to remember what card was where? Well, it was a version of that. They taught these people these location of the cards, and then one group, they had sleep for a full 8 hours. The other group only got to sleep, 4 to 5 hours, and then they tried to see if they could remember what they got taught the night before. And at first, it was pretty much they all remembered exactly the same. Well, the next time, they did the same thing, but this time, before the test, the group that didn't get much sleep, well, both groups really, they stressed them out. They had like a 30-minute thing where they tried to teach them like brand new stuff, played loud music, did all kind of crazy stuff just to get them a little freaked out. And then the group that had gotten the full 8 hour sleep, it didn't affect their performance. They still remembered where all the stuff was, but the group that hadn't slept as much, lost like, I think like 10-15% the other group.
To have a study like that kind of did on myself, just strictly for the fact that I feel like when I sleep 8 or more hours, I might as well be a zombie. I mean, it takes me a good 4 or 5 hours after getting that much sleep to get my bearings to learn how to function in society. Whereas if I sleep, most nights it's 4 or 5 hours and I wake up and, I'm gung-ho, I'm moving about. So I would be curious to see.
Well, the thing is, part of that study too, they believe that when you are sleep deprived, your body shifts more energy toward muscle memory than it does factual memory. That's why, sometimes you've ever had that time where you've you pretty much did something and you're like, how did I end up doing that? Because you're so tired, your body's just on autopilot. You drive home and you don't remember how you don't remember the actual drive. Because like I said, in those situations,
times, and that's a scary thought.
Those situations where you have limited energy, your brain might not be able to remember stuff or, think.
Your subconscious is just like, but okay, this is our routine. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's why, like I said, when you don't sleep that much, you may wake up feeling like energized stuff, and basically it's your body running on autopilot. But if you sit down and try to balance your checkbook, it might be all fucked up because you've lost the ability for, cognitive thought.
Might be all fucked up anyway because I haven't balanced a checkbook in God knows how long. That was a skill they taught us back in high school. I don't even have checks anymore.
Those of us that don't make a lot of money that have to worry about how much money, that's something we
Oh, I mean, I just pretty much operate on the I'm broke as fuck. I'm not going to spend money because I don't have money to spend, so I'm just going to sit here and, hey, Joe, I came up with this cool idea. You think people would be interested if we do a podcast? I mean, there might be a small startup investment, but, so now I can sit down in the basement for free and we can just jibber jabber. Yeah.
So, that's why, like I said, I rarely sleep myself. But, yeah, as long as you're not stressed out, according to this test, you should be able to function like a normal person. But you're not going to be able to deal with a stressful situation and still be able
to. That's okay. If you're sleep deprived, just make sure you have more nightmares to relieve the stress.
There you go. We can just even it out. Don't sleep, and when you do sleep, you have nightmares.
Damn, that'd be a shitty way to go through life, man.
Oh,
I don't know. That would.
I used to always have the nightmare that something was chasing me, and for some reason my gun wouldn't go off.
I don't know. I've always.
It had like a 100-pound trigger pull. It weighed like 10,000 pounds. I could barely aim it. It was like, I don't know. That's like a freaking nightmare.
I mean, one of the ones I can remember, and it's kind of during that time when you think you're asleep, but you're not really sure, and you know, you kind of have that falling sensation, and you wake up in like a sheer panic. That one happens to me quite a bit. And then I'm like, well, that cliff was really just my pillow.
That's because you got pushed out of the bed by the pit bull. You really were falling.
Yeah, probably. Damn it, Arabella.
Here's another thing. You know, we've talked about how Star Trek has kind of influenced real science. I mean, a lot of the stuff that started off as science fiction has now become science because people were inspired by Star Trek. I mean, our current cell phones and stuff, you know, the inventors of the cell phone basically like, yeah, we wanted to have a communicator like Star Trek and gave us the idea to make a cell phone. Well, another thing from the Star Trek universe is transparent aluminum. And it's now pretty much a thing. Basically, like all, you know, in the Star Trek universe, everything you see, like windows of the spaceship are made by this super strong, clear aluminum steel instead of glass. And currently there's two companies actually working on something similar to this. The first being the U.S. Navy. They're coming up with something they call Spinal, which is use powdered magnesium aluminate to make a clear glass-like substance.
So this is kind of interesting. So they're talking about, you know, basically using this because it's not as transparent as glass, but, you know, it is transparent. So I'm trying to...
It's stronger than bulletproof glass, but the thing with the military version is...
It allowed infrared to pass through it.
You know, and that's something that thick bulletproof glass will affect infrared. So you can't use it on, say, the optics of a robot or like a drone or something like that because, you know, they use infrared for targeting, for sight, you know, all that stuff, and having that thick armored glass would you know, basically blind them. So this right here can allow them to give them protection, but also, you know, allow them to see, which is, you know, you don't want a blind drone flying around your battle zone. Stuff could go bad like really quick.
That's interesting. I'd like to see kind of how cost effective and everything is. I mean, could this potentially replace, you know, certain aspects of steel in our lives, you know, to reinforce cars. Like, I'd like to see...
Get a whole car made out of, like, a transparent steel?
I mean, you know, the motor and everything? If it's, you know, lighter weight, if it's more durable and everything or else, like those, I mean, I could see that, you
those
know,
those gyro ball things from Jurassic Park. I mean, that,
yeah,
that
could
be
very well
cool.
be a thing. Like, hey, Mr. T-Rex, try playing soccer with this.
The other...
I'm sorry, football, to be more proper.
Mm-hmm. The other company working on it is called Cermet Corp, and their product is called aluminum. It's made aluminum oxynitrite, called, you know, Alon for short. But it's better clarity than the Navy's thing. But it's lighter than regular glass and stops bullets in half the thickness. And it's also better resistance to, like, you know, heat and the elements and stuff. So basically, you know, your armored vehicles and stuff, it allows them to be lighter, and like I say, it doesn't take nearly the thickness that it's required now to stop a bullet. Plus, they'll said it's lighter and more durable, so it's definitely got some good safety aspects.
Yeah, I'm just looking. I was just trying to see if they give any kind of cost estimates or anything else.
Not
I
really, because this is still kind of in the experimental phase. It's,
I mean, but still, that'd be kind of cool, you know. I mean, you get an SUV, and you know, all the rear windows and stuff like that are made out of this Alon material. And
hell, maybe I can finally get a cell phone screen that won't crack.
I mean, yeah, who knows? I mean,
bulletproof iPads, man.
This could be the next, you know, take on Gorilla Glass. I mean, I don't know. I'd be curious to see where this technology goes. I mean, it's definitely got some potential here.
And the last one, it's kind of spooky, but a robot has demonstrated self-awareness. Fucking Skynet,
yeah. Yeah, you know what? And I know I meant to talk about this on the last episode when we talked about the Terminator, but did you notice a relation like Skynet as a child very much? You know, I was like, oh, here it is. We've got Resident Evil all over
the Red
again.
Queen.
Yes. So, you know, basically the Hive is now, instead of a little girl, a little boy. Like, dude, if the Hive or, you know, the Red Queen and Skynet mate, like, we're all doomed.
Yeah, basically, this group got three of these. They call them Neo robots. They look like toy robots, but they have like a, you know, simple AI. and they ran them through a logic test to see if they could actually figure it out. And basically, they programmed the three robots to believe two of them had been given a what they called a dumbing pill that would prevent them from speaking. And then they asked all of them, which pill did you receive? Well, the two that you know, had actually received the pill didn't do anything because they couldn't talk. But like one of them actually stood up and goes, I do not know. And then as soon as he said, I do not know, he realized, oh, shit, I'm talking. Sorry, I do know now. I did not take the pill. So he like, you know, was able to figure out that, you know.
I have logic.
Yeah, that he could like, you know, figure that out on his own without having to be, you know, programmed to figure it out. So, I mean, it's very, very basic. And they said it's not really true self-awareness. It's just kind of they've shown now that they can program a robot to imitate self-awareness. Basically, you know, they can program an AI to, you know, use logic to figure out problems without having to be,
you know, reasoning.
Without the solution having to be like pre-programmed into them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's creepy though, man, because that's where it always starts, you know? Oh, it's dumb, it's harmless, it's kind of cute in a way, and before you know it, it's becoming more and more self-aware, and, you know, the impending robot doom is upon us.
That's why I don't trust cute things, man. They sneak up on you.
And you know what's bad is, like, looking at what these little robots look like. Like, I can imagine these already on Walmart's toy shelf.
Yeah, they're like little
right
toys,
now.
Too, yeah. Dude. Yeah, you can see these things in your house.
It's like a, it's like almost, it kind of looks like a Wall-E robot in a way. Like,
yeah, this could easily turn into, like, a real version of Chucky. Yeah. At night when you're asleep, your little nanobots walking around the house, like, you know, trying
Speaking
to kill
of
you.
Speaking of Chucky, I saw an interesting meme the other day, and it was basically this lady saying, yeah, my 4-year-old daughter was upset because I wouldn't get her the doll movie, and, like, she's, like, got a death grip on the Chucky DVD.
yeah, that'll mess a child up. All right, well, that will be right back.
Stay tuned, folks.
Hello, Marvel Universe! The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome back to Nerd News, folks. We've got an extensive lineup today as we wind down from San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, a lot of cool trailers and movie news and all that stuff popped up this weekend, so we got a lot of stuff for you.
Yeah, so I think with no further ado, let's just go ahead and jump into some of the trailers. First up, we had Suicide Squad, which I thought was pretty awesome. I mean, it was nice to see Harley at her best.
Yeah, seeing a live-action Harley Quinn is pretty awesome. Even Will Smith's was a Deadshot. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
looks
I was
pretty
a little
badass.
Bit, you know, at first I was like, I don't know about Will playing that character. But after seeing it, I'm like, all right, you know what? Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, well, and, you know, and this one, if you don't know anything about the Suicide Squad, it's a group of villains that the government has basically enslaved and be like, all right, you know, instead of going to the prison and being executed, y'all go up on these missions and save the world, you know, and you may not survive, but it's either that or prison, so you work for us.
Basically, forced mercenaries.
Pretty much.
I don't think the benefits are all that great, but hey, at least you get to live.
So, yeah, this is, looks like it's going to be like a, just a straight-up action movie. And the cool thing about the Suicide Squad, too, is from the looks of it, at least from the trailer, they're showing a lot of them kind of pre-Suicide Squad, and they're kind of trying to make you feel bad for these people. So I don't think they're going to be so evil at this point that we can't care about these characters.
No, I think they're very much going to have to be likable.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think they're going to be bad guys, but they're not so far down the bad path that they're like, you know, unsavable, that you're like, I don't give a fuck if this guy gets killed or not. He's killed 37 people.
Until he gets a psychotic Joker. And
yeah. Who looks like he's a fan of the ICP.
Straight up juggling.
I still don't know about this Joker, but that thing...
I'm pretty sure he's got a throat tattoo of a hatchet.
I mean, he looks like the freaking the Juggalo hatchet man. I mean, But the end of it where you see him, like, I think he's torturing Harley before she becomes Harley. He's like, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to hurt you really, really bad. That is pretty creepy. Of the new DC lineup, this is the one that I'm probably actually excited about seeing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess jumping further on, the Batman versus Superman trailer. I mean, that actually looks pretty good. I mean, I know that wasn't
Killer Croc looks awesome in that Suicide Squad trailer. Yeah, because I mean, I hated Man of Steel. I thought it was stupid, and so I've not
I've been a much bigger fan of the Batman films than I have anything Superman. Unfortunately, Superman's always, I don't know, just some reason has not appealed to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I cared nothing about like the new Superman movie because, like I said, the first one sucked so bad. But after seeing this trailer, I think I will give it a shot. The trailer at least looks pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, the action scenes look pretty intense. I mean, and the other thing too is I can't figure out exactly who I'm rooting for most. You know, it's like I'm almost envisioning
Batman
at some
because
point,
I hate Superman.
Well, I mean, I can't say that, hey, you're the greater or the lesser evil, you know, when the two clash. I mean, I almost foresee
Batman has to beat his ass for making that stupid movie he made the first go around.
I mean, if nothing else, I mean, you know, the freaking Wayne Tower can be rebuilt or whatever, but you know, there in the toward the end of the trailer where you see the Batmobile in flames and shit, like that's one I would say was probably an unforgivable offense. But
well, I did like how they kind of took everybody's complaint about the first movie that there was way too much collateral damage, Superman wouldn't have wiped out half a city like that, and showed that in the kind of that's why Batman doesn't trust him is because, you know, there was a Wayne building in Metropolis, so you know he lost employees, lost friends probably when that building came down, and you know, he feels responsible for those people. So I mean, Superman's got to pay.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wonder though if, you know, Lex Luthor or maybe even another villain doesn't do something so outrageously over the top that it brings Batman and Superman together, and you know it, and either another film or another spinoff series or something else out of it.
This is going to be the birth of the Justice League, and this isn't like the end of the Justice League, so we know they have to kind of
unite somehow.
Yeah, if not like each other, at least get some kind of like, you know,
agree to disagree.
Yeah, some respect going or something. So yeah, we don't know who's going to pop up to what event is going to bring them together, but yeah, of course at some point it's going to have to happen. But yeah, I just want to see like Batman whoop Superman's ass.
True dat, true dat.
For no other reason, just for making Man of Steel.
All right, one of the trailers got to see Ash vs. Evil Dead. Dude, I got to say, I am stoked for this. Like, in fact, I've already called Comcast this week to make sure the Starz package is part of my upgraded TV program.
Yeah, I got to make sure I have that. If I don't, I'm, like, ordering it because it looks so freaking awesome.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it stays true to the original film. I love the, you know, the throwbacks and the references and, you know, some of the new cast members and stuff we're going to see. I mean, it's just so over the top and so everything that you would anticipate.
And it just looks like they're taking it seriously. It looks pretty scary. I mean, and definitely bloody. They're definitely not going for a, you know, kid-friendly version of.
No, well, I think that's why you would probably see
trying
it
to
on
keep it hardcore.
A premium channel more so than. I mean, I'm glad that they're going with a Starz or an HBO or a premium channel more so than trying to turn this into a toned down made for TV series, because so much of the film would be
just
gotta
lost. Let the boomstick do the talking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of like the fact that, you know, you see Bruce fucking using the force to pull the chainsaw to him and stuff. I was like, that's interesting.
Well, no, Pedro kicked it to him.
Well, okay, I miss Pedro. The guy's name's not even Pedro, but I'm already voting for Pedro. I've dubbed him Pedro. I am voting for him.
I think it was Pedro or Pablo or something. I can't remember.
It was
a P name. I remember that much.
I don't know. It's kind of the throwback for Napoleon Dynamite, because that's what I thought. Because I'm like, yeah, this guy's kind of clueless and reminds me a little bit of Pedro. So in my head, you're now Pedro.
All right.
So looking forward to that. I don't know if the trailer is still up, but I did get to see the shitty cam version of the Deadpool trailer. And even though the visual effects and stuff weren't finished, I got to say, man, I am more stoked about Deadpool than ever.
Oh, it looked so much like Deadpool. And just the comedy of it. And
I mean, dude, the fourth wall has just been shattered.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, when he looks at the screen, he's like, cue the music. And just all the jokes, like when they're fixing to turn him into Deadpool, he's like, whatever you do, don't make the superhero's suit green or animated. That'll suck.
Yes, I mean.
I mean, he takes shots at, you know, his green lantern performance. And, oh, it just looks, and him and whatever, TJ Miller's character, too, where they're just kind of, he just keeps insulting Deadpool, and Deadpool's like, yep, it's true. He's like, dude, you look like a nutsack with teeth. Like, it was my favorite line. And he's like, yeah, I know, I'm pretty hard looking.
Yeah, I even heard that, you know, I think the Deadpool game got actually pulled from shelves, but I think this trailer and everything, there's been such a, you know, Deadpool's been revived that I think even the video game now is going to be back on store shelves for folks to pick up. So.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's so, I heard that when they showed it at San Diego that the audience was so in love with it, they're like, play it again. I mean, they had to play it
yes.
twice.
I mean.
They're like, we're kind of running low on time. They're like, we don't care. Play that motherfucker again.
I mean, dude, Deadpool is one of those that, you know, you either love him or hate him. And, I mean, he's got such a fan following. And, I mean, the fact that they're staying so true to the Deadpool character with this film, dude, I'm absolutely stoked for it.
Yeah, I can't wait. This is definitely on my top movie choices for whenever it comes out.
The other thing that we had was the there was a Star Wars trailer that was released. That looks freaking awesome. I mean, you know, still not telling much about the storyline or anything.
It's not that far away, but we still really don't know anything about the storyline. But at least with this kind of like behind the scenes video they released, we're seeing a lot of the stuff is practical effects. They've kind of gone back to the old school way of doing things. So. I mean, the story suck, but it's going to look like Star Wars. Yeah, it's going to look amazing.
I think the saying was, you know, we all love the film, and, you know, this is the story, or, you know, these are the characters and everything that you love, but, you know, this isn't that same movie or something. So, I mean, there was... I don't know. I mean, I definitely feel like this is either going to be a make or break, either this is going to be a huge, momentous... you know, success, or it's going to be an absolute disaster, and, you know, folks will riot. I see streets burning. Like
another thing that that popped up in Star Wars news, they announced what the next standalone movie is going to be. We, you know, we already
is this
learned,
the Han Solo.
Yeah, we already learned Rogue One is going to be kind of like their war movie, like their Saving Private Ryan, kind of the story of them getting the plans to the Death Star. But the next one up is going to be like a Han Solo origin movie showing, you know, young Han Solo, probably, you know, how he gets the Falcon, how he meets Chewie, all that good stuff, probably.
I mean, you know, and this will be, you know, it looks like Christopher Miller and Phil Lloyd that I think they did some of the Lego movie, right?
Yeah, they were involved with the Lego movie, so that turned out to be a pretty damn good movie. So
I didn't see the Lego. I know I've played the Lego games, and I thought the games were pretty good. I don't know if there's any correlation between the movies or not, but I have not heard anybody bash the Lego films, so I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious to check this out, and it'd be awesome to kind of see that origin story that you don't really get a whole lot of.
Unless you read the books that no longer are canon.
Yeah, well, some of us don't have three walls of bookshelves filled with Star Wars books.
Cause that was really one of the very first Star Wars novels released back in like the whatever early 80s, late 70s. It was like The Adventures of Han Solo. It was like a three-part book that showed like basically his origin story up from him like being a kid all the way up to him, you know, meeting Chewbacca and finally getting the Falcon. Boba Fett shows up in that story as well, so it's kind of his first run-in with Fett. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get Fett in a Han Solo movie.
That would be awesome. Up next, I'll talk a little bit about the Walking Dead. We got the season 6 trailer, and I gotta say, I mean, it looks interesting. I'm kind of torn now because Rick went from that likable, level-headed guy to I'm very much seeing, you know, the psychotic side of Rick come out in this.
Yeah, he's starting to look like he's like the new governor or something. Like he may be the this season's bad guy. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, you know, either that or, you know, it has a propensity to you know, divide the group. You know,
yeah.
Maybe Rick's core followers continue to follow Rick, and you know, the other groups try to split off, and all of a sudden now we've got warring factions going on or something.
And it looks like, you know, Daryl gets into some shit this season.
Yeah, seeing him tied up against the tree and everything, I don't know. But then you see him escape at the end and unleash unholy hell. So, you know, of course, Daryl dies, we riot, we've all heard, blah, blah, blah. But I'm curious to kind of see, you know, what happens with that guy.
And then also the spinoff series, which will be starting before the regular series returns, Fear the Walking Dead. And that looks interesting because, you know, it's whole other coast. It's West Coast, but also it's kind of...
I don't know, dude. Are there that many guns out on the left coast? I mean, well...
Yeah, I mean, there's there's guns out there. if not, the gangs will supply them, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's it doesn't start like with the first series. We started the show with Rick waking up from his coma and the apocalypse has already happened. With this, it's showing like the early days. It's showing like the fall of civilization. That's definitely a new aspect to the story that we're going to get to see.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm watching the trailer and everything. I think it looks pretty interesting. I mean, will it have the same success and the same following as The Walking Dead? I don't know. I think that's to be determined, but I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see the direction that Robert Kirkman goes with this. I mean,
yeah, and this is not something that's been based on a comic book, so it's like a whole new characters, new story. So it's not something that, even though the comic books and the TV show have kind of separated, the characters are still basically the same. So this is going to be like a pretty much a brand new property. So there's not going to be any, like, you know, spoilers if you've read the comics.
Yeah, I don't know. I bought, you know, I think two or three of the compendiums or whatever, and then I think I had to buy like a whole bunch of the mini series, and now I'm back behind. I mean, I think I'm up to like, you know, 136 of the comics or something like that, but I think they're up to 140 something now, so I need to catch up. But, you know, even with the comics, there were quite a few variations and how... I mean, the timeline progresses so much faster in the comics than they do in the actual films. So, I don't know. I'm curious to check it out, and we'll see how it goes. We have our new Aunt May in Spider-Man, Marissa Tomei.
Tomei.
Yeah, I apologize.
Aunt MILF.
USM's Aunt MILF.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, yeah. I'm just seeing, yeah, even in the previous movies, Aunt May being an older woman, and now she's like, you know, hell, probably our age, or at least my age.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how her character does and everything else. What was some of the other films she's been in?
My Cousin Vinny is the big one, the one she's like, you know, most known for. Which, hey, they haven't announced who's playing Uncle Ben. Maybe we can get Joe Pesci in there as Uncle Ben and do a whole like My Cousin Vinny reunion.
Dude, that would be freaking awesome.
Pito, with great power comes great responsibility. Freaking Joe Pesci giving that speech.
Holy shit, dude, that would be freaking phenomenal. You know what? Even if that isn't a part of the movie or whatever, like, somebody needs to make sure that overdub happens. Like,
he ends up pistol whipping, like, the you know, whatever, Venom or whatever the villain is.
Dude, that would be freaking phenomenal.
You laughed at me?
And other comic book news, or not really comic book, but... Stephen Amell has confirmed that the Green Arrow name change will be official. So
it's now Green Arrow instead.
Yeah, Green Arrow.
And he's got a whole new costume too, from the looks of it.
Dude, this costume looks fucking badass.
Yeah,
too.
He looks all swatted out. I mean, he's got like because last year is basically like a leather jacket with a hoodie.
It was going to be the world's easiest Comic Con, or yeah, Dragon Con.
Yeah, now it looks like freaking whatever, some kind of BMX armor, tack gear.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It looks freaking awesome, but it's just sweet. It really makes me want to get back into leather crafting, or to actually get into leather crafting instead of rather just...
I don't think you have time for this Dragon Con. Maybe you can get together by next
one.
Dragon Con.
Maybe.
You can be you can be Green Arrow.
I need to lose some weight, because I'm going to be the fat Green Arrow.
No, I would be the fat Green Arrow.
I would be the...
You'd be the kind of out-of-shape Green Arrow.
I'd be the guy that's not going to chase you. Like, I better have homie.
You don't have to. You got the arrows. I mean, you don't have to chase anybody.
The first footage of the upcoming X-Files miniseries has been revealed. Short, you know, 13, 14 seconds, but it is kind of cool to see, you know, Mulder and Scully back at it again. And this will debut Sunday, January 25th of 2016 after the NFC Championship game, which means nothing to me.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
But anyway, up next, So we keep talking about doing this adult Disney trip.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thought it'd be cool to go around, you know, Epcot and stuff like that. Well, get this, dude. Shanghai Disney is going to include Star Wars, Iron Man rides, a pirate theme land.
Road trip, yo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's roads crossing that much ocean, but, I mean, we could definitely get on some airplanes and fly out there. But, yeah, I mean, just looking at some of this stuff, I think it'd be absolutely phenomenal. Plus, you know, all the Chinese heritage and stuff like that that's going to be thrown into the mix. So I thought that was a rather interesting article, you know, something to maybe put on a bucket list somewhere and check out. I mean,
hell yeah.
You know, between Shanghai Disney doing this and, you know, we had Universal Studios talking about trying to do their Nintendo theme stuff. I mean, we go south and then we go to that other coast, way over the ocean.
Alrighty then.
Up next, a little bit of sad news. The Nintendo CEO, Satoru Iwata, has died at age 55.
I mean, that's literally the dude who programmed most of our childhood. I mean, without him, we got no Mario, no Zelda.
No Mario Kart to fucking piss us off. Dude, I mean, what? That game's probably ended our friendship like 6 times. I mean, so just thought I'd share that bit of news. That's really what I've brought to the table, Joe. Is there any final thoughts? Anything that you've...
No, I think that about wraps it up for our summer movie episode. Speaking of summer, I was on ESO a few weeks ago talking about Jaws. Go check that out. And, you know, I don't know when it's coming out, but I'm going to be on the Earth Station MCU talking about Ant-Man. So check that out when it comes out. Check out our Zazzle store. Buy some T-shirts. You can find us on iTunes, Stitchers, all the podcast places. Go to our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Check out our Twitter and our Instagram, at CigarNerdPod. And check out our Facebook page, Cigar Nerds on Facebook. And with that, have you ever danced in the devil with a pale moonlight? Peace! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.